what is soul? How do you define soul?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've thought too, that's a really important question to answer everybody for themselves, because otherwise we vaguely end up referring to spirit and soul and make them kind of interchangeable. So in my own practice and study through the years, I've combined my sense of soul and soul making from Carl Jung to Robert Moore to James Hillman, and I picked up a lot of the idea of making soul from James Hillman's work, because I know I used to think that, well, soul is just something we're born with and we have and it's always the same. But I really liked his premise, that as I understand it, to be that soul is an ongoing art project. It's like a sculpture. So we are born with soul, but we become more soulful if and as and when we add consciousness to that. So when we consciously move into happiness, sadness, experiences we like, experiences we don't, and we reflect upon those and find our deepest truth and find what it means to be really authentic and start to have desire and to live with passion, that I think is what makes soul. Because, you know, you'll meet someone or you maybe just hear somebody speaking who passes you by and you think, ooh, that's a soulful person. Well, I personally feel that maybe they were born with a certain je ne sais quoi, right? That is just with them. So they're charismatic. But a soulful person doesn't always have to be highly charismatic either. They're someone who I think is deeply considered and has done some deep reflection in their lives and has asked the question, you know, what is soul? What does that mean to me?
So it's almost as if we're born with kind of like a spiritual raw material, or that then part of maybe even our purpose on earth is to shape that raw material into our particular presence. Is that
beautiful? Beautiful. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Yes, I think that's exactly it.
That makes a lot of sense. And what brings you to begin to do work, to do the shaping, the soulful work, to look deeper and experience more deeply? What's the call? What does that mean to answer the call?
That's a really good question too. I think there's many inculcating experiences. There are many ways to reach that soul making. One, I think, can be through the simple following of your passion. What is your passion? What are you willing, if you have to give up to do that? Another is, so that can be through the path of joy. But another, I believe, is through the path of sorrow and difficulty. And I know for myself, that's how I came to making soul. Because I had so much sorrow that I had to find out how to meet myself. And in discovering that I could do that and needed to, that's where, for myself anyway, the soul making began. It's like getting really down and dirty with life, with God, and with your own soul. Uh-huh. You know, where the rubber meets the road. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think for me, being in those places, there's a certain requirement of surrender. That when I reach those places, and maybe it's true in my most ecstatic, joyful places also, but there's certainly then, if I understand what you're saying and try to apply it to myself, there's certainly that point where we consciously step into this, but there's a surrender to the process, to what we're met with and what that means and where we go from there.
Oh, tell me more about that. That's interesting to
me.
Well,
I'm actually thinking of things that you have written about in your books about coming to a place of fighting. I don't want this sad experience. I want to control. I don't want to be afraid. And really part of sinking into the abyss that you taught, that, you know, you have talked about, that is a surrendering to me, rather than, so I may make a conscious choice to want to live a soulful life, but there's it's an interplay of stepping into and also recognizing that we often don't have a choice.
And I think what you're referring to is how I understand it also is the difference between ego and soul, and that the ego may want us to try to control, to try to make soul, to think mentally, to think, oh, that's a good idea, I'd like to do that. But I think what you're getting at is a wonderful, deep experience of that which is not me and yet a part of my blueprint.
Yes.
So not me and my ego, but it is part of my divinely gifted etheric
yes.
presence.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and that's the beauty of soul, yeah? Because soul, the way we understand it or tend to describe it, it doesn't die.
Mm-hmm.
The ego dies, the body dies, but soul, in my mind, is immutable
mm-hmm.
in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's, and would you talk more about your thoughts about ego? Because I know that we have talked about some differences that we... some different beliefs that we share that maybe are different from other soul psychologists and
yes.
popular writers.
Oh, thank you. I love to talk about ego and spirit, actually. And in Two-Legged Medicine, my second medicine book, right, I have a section in one of my chapters with the title, Ego is Not the Enemy.
Exactly.
And it just makes me giggle and laugh to talk about it because there's so much freedom that we don't give ourselves. And when we release the resistance to the idea that ego is somehow bad and needs to be controlled or contained or killed or whatever, when we release that thought, for me, that's where the giggling comes up because it's such a relief to realize that our ego being part of our psyche, you know, and I've, like you, have worked with the psyche for 20, 30 years now in myself and with other people. Mm-hmm. The ego is designed to help us. I mean, gosh, we're in separate bodies. We need an ego. I need to know that this is me talking to you and you talking to me and what I am and who I am in the world. And fabulous. I mean, thank God for that. The ego is our recognition of our separate selves. And separation is not all a bad thing. I think sometimes in New Age thought it is. But maybe people who are emphasizing becoming egoless are really doing us a favor, trying to rebalance us mm-hmm. from a society that's been too godless and too egoic to the spirituality. But on the way, they've sort of thrown out the baby with the bathwater, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if ego is the baby, then the bathwater is spirit.
Wow.
So I'm all about helping myself, and when I was in private practice, helping others, and now in my speaking and presentations, mm-hmm. continuing to help us all, myself included, keep developing a healthy psyche, healthy attitudes, a sense of well-being, so that we can hook up to spirit, which we were designed to do. That's what I know through my experience of doing this work, both for myself and other people. Spirit that we, and this is my course philosophy and my belief and also my intuition, is that we all came from spirit and we're all going back to spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And we are spirit, but we're embodied spirit. And as we embody, the only way spirit can fully trickle down into us and sift down into our physicality is when our psyches, which dwell in our individual bodies, when our psyches are solid and healthy, because spirit is always solid and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But until our psyches are solid and healthy, we can't translate. We don't know what we don't know. We don't realize what we're missing. But when our psyches get healthy, oh boy, then we can, oh girl, then we can completely connect in the spiritual realm and allow it to continually inform, encourage, and inspire us.
Wow. And as you're speaking, I have this picture, because I still struggle with the idea of psyche and how is psyche separate then from soul and what does that mean? But it sounds as if the picture I get is we have this soul, which is sort of the extension of spirit into this particular physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that ego, which is how we are the interface with this physical world, this world that's permeated with spirituality but has this physical dimension, and that the psyche is sort of the weaving together of ego, and which includes thought and emotion and so forth, and soul.
I like that. Say that again, that psyche is the weaving together of spirit and soul.
And the ego.
Spirit and ego. Mm-hmm. I like that. Ooh, run with that, Jenny.
But it's that's great. The picture. And it really helped when you said, you know, that psyche is our individual beliefs and feelings, emotion, the mm-hmm. sort of the non-physical, but yet the unique ego-connected mm-hmm. Experiences, non-physical experiences that mm-hmm. we have that are a reflection and come from an interaction with the physical, with this realm, this world, the earth
mm-hmm.
realm.
Huh. Beautiful. Yeah, egos are so awesome. They are our psychological blueprint, really. They are our blueprint for living, and without them, we would be bereft. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'd be in more of a mess than we are today. Mm-hmm. Whereas I really think a way to, if it's true that we evolve, which sometimes I question, or that it's even about evolving. Other times I think, yeah, we're evolving. We need to, God help us evolve faster, mm-hmm. right? But if the ego is properly stoked and woven in with spirit, I believe that's what does evolve us towards greater peace, greater wisdom, a greater sense of true unity, not like the flight to spirit kind of, oh, everything is lovely and beautiful and I'm way up here in the heavens, but I'm no earthly good to anybody. But the kind that really brings spirit into earth, the people that are doing good works and who are solid in their sense of self. I also think that to have an ego, that if you want to give your ego away, like as to God, like some people mm-hmm. talk about gifting, you know, being that's the gift to spirit, giving your ego. Well, beautiful, but do you want to give? What kind of present, what kind of gift do you want to give? If you are with spirit, the great all, however you perceive that, goddess, God, don't you want to give something lovely? Don't you want to give your best gift possible? So if you're giving ego, make it a beautiful ego that you're giving. Craft it, develop it. And you know, Carl Jung says we need to be developing that ego, particularly the first half of our life. And then the second half is really how do we hook that up, Abraham Maslow style, I think, to higher and higher levels of development, understanding, and application of wisdom.
Which is that sort of that crafting, and that maybe that's part of the soulful journey also, is that, or at least that's a byproduct, a positive byproduct of a soulful journey, is allowing that ego to move up the pyramid, up the,
yes.
to be better crafted, to be a more beautiful gift.
Yes.
And it's interesting, as you were talking, I was thinking, oh, to hand... Yeah, why hand over this thing that you don't want? Here, I'll give that as a gift to God because I don't want it. It's a bad thing, you know. Rather to recognize that it's a beautiful gift and how to make it a beautiful gift.
Yeah.
I also appreciate that it's not one or the other. That it's not either ego is good or ego is bad. You talked about, yes, we've become, and our culture is ill with this... indulgence of ego might be the best way, or this worship of ego in a really unhealthy way. But that doesn't mean that ego is the problem.
Right.
It's rather our interaction, our perception, our choices, or our lack of choice, our unmindful choices. Ooh. Around ego. That makes a lot of sense, Robin.
Well said. Our unmindful choices. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful.
So, the last thing that I wanted to ask about was renewing the soul. So if we are building the soul, if we are crafting the soul and we're conscious of that, we hear the call, we step into it, we come from our ego and then go with the flow of the river, then tell me about renewing. How does that fit in?
Well, I think renewing is necessary, just like when your house gets dirty, you want to clean it up.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's not really that your soul is getting dirty, although sometimes it can get stagnant and can get things in the way. Maybe they do need some polishing. It does need some polishing and brightening. Or even that idea that, or the experience of just getting low on provisions. We utilize our provisions to live. Well, we utilize the provisions of soul for our living too. So it's important to stoke them up, stoke the fire, re-energize whatever those provisions are. So I find a major way to do that is by finding inspiration. So whatever inspires you is what creates and deepens your own soul. And I know what inspires me that I've written about so much, particularly in moose medicine and turtle medicine, is that the natural world is so magically able to connect with us. And when our soul starts to come alive, we allow that experience into that moment. And when we, I think sometimes maybe it's get brave enough to, and mindful enough to allow and to let go and to release our sometimes unconscious or subconscious resistances to the magic of what is. And when we also know that we are so valuable that we are never having to be subject to darkness or any kind of dark spiritual experience, when we've healed any of those wounds in the psyche, then once again, we're connected with spirit in a way where we can afford to go out into nature and deeply relax, because we know and we trust that whatever comes will be good and sentient and loving and kind and amazing. And once we start to experience that, and I know you've had many wonderful experiences in nature yourself, then it builds on itself, yeah? And that's how we continue to fill up our coffers, to re-inspire and re-ignite soul.
Wow. And that's helpful because, of course, I was thinking, talking about it, create enriching, developing soul as a finite process. Oh, now I've developed my soul. Now I'm done. Check that off my list and I'll move on. But of course, it's an ongoing process throughout our lives. And there's always changing and shifting. And as you said, and recognizing that we can become stagnant at a spiritual level, at a soulful level. I also was really taken by the fact that you speak about there are internal experiences, activities, actions that come from our emotions, our internal responses to our experience. And there's also engaging in the world around us, particularly the natural world, the wild world,
yes,
as a way of building soul as well, that it's not an internal process or an external process that's given to us, but that it has to be both.
That's a great point. That's so wonderful, because I think that the external world is there to delight, inspire, refresh, and renew us. And we can allow that to speak to our cellular structure and actually physically, positively influence our cellular structure to the point that we don't have to be out in the woods every moment to allow the cells to enliven themselves and to remember. And, you know, people who have been inspired by my books or other books that write about this, the fact that you can get inspired by reading someone else's experience right there tells you you already have that in your being. Something deep in your being already knows, but can be even further enlivened by reading the words that someone else has just taken the time, perhaps, to write down. Then that inspires you. I also think that an extroverted person may look more towards going to the external world for that renewal, as I do, but an internal, a more introverted person, extroverted versus introverted, and you know, Jung spoke about introversion not as being our American idea of that as being slightly negative, that I think we have about introversion, like somehow we're not supposed to be quieter and within, we're supposed to be gregarious and out there all the time. His European understanding of introversion was much more that the introvert is simply one who comes from within first, finds their truth, and then is happy to share it, maybe with a few people at a time, but not the whole world all at once. Uh-huh. Whereas the extrovert gets their juice from the outer world, from other people, from things, and finds more of their truth by speaking, by interacting out there. So if you're more introverted, you may take these words and this podcast this morning that we're doing, or today, or this evening, whenever time our listeners are listening to it, and realize that it's a place coming from within you that is sufficient within itself. And you'll still want to go out to nature, but maybe you don't do it as often, or maybe you do it in a way that feels more quiet and absorbing to you. Whereas if you're more extroverted, you may need and want to get out there more often, do it with great outer enthusiasm, and want to bring other people with you and talk about what you're experiencing at the time. Whereas introvert will have the experiences, then mull them over, and then later maybe want to write about them or share them with a close friend or two. So extroverted or introverted, and you coming from the internal versus the external, it's all good. And again, that to me gets us back to the beauty of our individual egos.
Exactly.
Yeah?
Exactly.
Who we each are, how wonderful. We get to craft our lives just how we want to. And how beautiful to know we are making soul as a result.
No matter what our way is, what our path is, our unique path.
Yeah.
Is there any last thought that you would want to share with people who want to understand soul better and want to know how to craft their soul better?
One way, because I'm a writer, I would say read some of your favorite authors. Find them and read them. Listen to them on audio tapes. And go do the things that you know bring you alive. Yeah.
Bring you alive. What a great way to end it. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Jenny. And thank you, whoever is listening to us. This is a fireside chat. We actually did today, my dear friend and colleague, Jenny Watts and I, we did today in my kitchen.
Yes.
With the oven going and the smell of a wonderful luncheon and the fire going in the living room that is just perking away on this late fall, beautiful autumn day. So my best to each of you listening, and to you, Jenny. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.
Here's to us being and remaining and renewing so that we can always be naturally inspired.